Excellent. Okay, Siren Radio continues in its own way. And the weather today, highs of 20 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a bright and breezy Thursday morning.
Somebody remind me where I am, Miami or Timbuktu. Did I ever tell you my uncle's monkey ran away from the zoo? Would you tell me what this all means? What happens if I go through that door? 'Cause I'm looking up at the ceiling, but it's turning into the floor. Ooh, when I'm bored, I kinda drift away. I'm not sure.
And clearly, if you wanted to take part in proper air ballooning, you need to have some understanding of engineering, technology, and so on and so forth. So why not actually connect with the head of engineering at the Institute of Engineering and Technology, the IET, of course, the wonderful David Lakin. Good morning, David. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Good morning.
Wonderful. Now, here we are. GCSE results day has arrived. It's all connected from that particular perspective. And we still haven't quite got the balance right in terms of STEM subjects. People are still panicking about the whole system. I mean, is this going to be a constant battle? I mean, in terms of seeing engineering and mechanical sciences and so on, the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics as being valid, worthwhile subjects and interesting subjects in their own way, when people are actually sort of thinking, well, no, I'm much less stick with the humanities or the arts.
It certainly is a challenge, and today's very exciting to see students getting their results and seeing what their different options are. But no, you're right, it is a challenge. We need to continue working hard to change perceptions of what STEM and in particular engineering is all about, to encourage more young people to consider it as a career option. There's lots of initiatives and programs out there, including many of which we run ourselves through the IET, things like our Faraday programs and our First Lego League, to try and inspire and encourage more young people to study STEM and to consider STEM as their next options.
Just looking at the financial rewards, I mean, the notion of the benefits of studying STEM-based subjects, science, technology, engineering and maths, of course, you know, you can actually be earning somewhere between £41,000 and £100,000 a year, as opposed to, you know, not in any ways. I mean, half of those who were started off with STEM backgrounds started their careers with salaries over £21,000. In my own case, I did a chemistry and biology degree. It does actually help, you know, and these are not as difficult as perhaps they're made out to appear.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Those that have studied STEM subjects are more likely to be slightly more successful later on in life, which is fantastic, because studying STEM subjects opens the doors to many opportunities for young people to pursue. But it's not just about the STEM subjects. STEM education is incredibly important, and especially from an early age of inspiring young people right at the very beginning of their education. What is equally as important is that students have a broad and balanced education. This is fundamental to the formation of future engineering. Engineering is changing, the technology is changing, we've all seen the developments over the years, and we need more young people to have the broad and balanced knowledge and skills that are required to engineer a better world for us all to live in.
It's interesting to find that although more students have been taking STEM subjects at A-levels, there isn't any change in those moving on to university courses from those sort of subjects. That seems a little bit unusual. Is it just a case of they're sickened at A-level, that they can't progress it any further, or is it just a case of, well, maybe they're not thinking in broader terms about the unique nature of synthesising both the science and the arts?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. There's so many opportunities available to young people after they've finished their A-levels. Obviously, there's apprenticeships. There's a big push for encouraging more young people to study apprenticeships. There's lots of other routes, and of course, university is one of those. We would certainly like to see more young people going on to university to study STEM subjects, but as you touched on there, that equally, some of the other subject areas can help them develop to becoming a more broad and balanced engineer.
It's fairly critical to the future of Britain as a country, as a culture, and so on, that bearing in mind the Isambard Kingdom, Brunels, the wealth of engineering expertise that we've actually had over the years, that we don't lose this in the 21st century.
Yeah, very much so. We've got a long history of amazing engineers and scientists that has helped to shape and create the world that we live in now. But again, technology is changing, the world that we live in is changing, and we need more young people to come through and be the designers and be the engineers of the future. Young people only need to look around them to be inspired. Everything from their own gadgets, mobile phones, through to the clothing they wear, the shoes on their feet, and the food and water that they drink. Engineers are involved in everything around us, and young people have the exciting opportunity to be part of that and design and engineer the next thing.
And in terms of clearly that development of science and where things are going, we've just literally combed the surface on a little piece today. Where would you recommend people actually go to find out more details about some of the exciting opportunities that are available if indeed you take that science, technology, engineering and mathematical routes to future development?
Yeah, there's lots of information available. One of the first protocols is our own Institution of Engineering and Technology website, our Faraday website, but then also other organisations such as Tomorrow's Engineers, where there's lots of career guidance and career information about the different routes into engineering and the options that are available to them.
And what led you into the whole area, David? I mean, was there ever a moment where you thought, no, I'd actually much prefer to be an interior designer?
My background is engineering. I served an apprenticeship. I went to university to get my degree, and I did that for many years. And then one day we had a visiting local school came in. I had the opportunity to show them around and show them my job as a production engineer, and seeing the response I got from those young people and the light bulb moment when they were inspired and suddenly said, oh, I would like to be an engineer, sort of gave me the spark to want to inspire more young people and then moved into STEM education to do that very thing of inspire more young people to fulfill their potential and go on and do fantastic things.
Well, David, it's been a privilege actually sharing some thoughts with you today. As a GCSE results day, so great stuff from that point of view. From the Institution of Engineering and Technology, IET, David Lincoln, we salute you. Take care now.
Thank you.
An old phrase of the 20th century used to be keep taking the tablets. Well, these days, when you refer to tablets and so on, it's a whole new world of technology that's in shape here. And as we actually approach the forthcoming academic year, it seems that actually having a decent tablet that can actually enable you to keep up to date with technology, etc., is absolutely vital. So who better to actually start talking about the importance of a decent tablet with improved functionality, competitive specifications, and even more than the ace editor-in-chief of Trusted Reviews? It's the one and only Evan Kyprios. How are you, Evan?
Good, thank you.
Wonderful. So, Evan, this line that, in essence, we're shifting away the notepad scenario. Maybe it's the end of the day for the fountain pen or the biro or the notepad from that perspective, but actually having a decent tablet that you can actually sort of rely on is pretty much an essential purchase.
It really is, and especially when you mentioned the notepad, you know, a lot of these tablets have the functionality to write on them with a pen, essentially. So you're replacing it with like for like. So it's not just about typing anymore. You can actually write and draw as you would with a pen and paper. But I think the key thing is that what I'm saying is don't cheap out on a laptop because your experience won't be very good. So if you've got enough money to spend on a really good laptop, fine. But you know what? If you're going to spend less than £400, really, you're probably better off with a tablet.
That's an interesting concept there, because clearly there are a number of budget laptops that are around and you think, oh, this is fine. And then, of course, the memory isn't huge and so on. So you definitely recommend actually going for the tablet as opposed to, as I say, a budget laptop.
Yeah. What happens when you've got a laptop that particularly Windows laptops, really, that cost less than £400, is you're making compromises, and you're usually making compromises on every aspect of the specification. So it will be quite slow. The battery life will be pretty poor. It might be quite heavy to carry around, which is another consideration. You know, if you're going in and out of classes, you kind of want something that is light and portable. And it's one of those things where the screen isn't very good. Everything, you're compromising on everything, really, and you're not getting much in return. However, if you've got a tablet, and that doesn't have to be a iPad, it can be an Android tablet, although they're slightly not quite as advanced yet as Apple in that regard. But there's also some really good Windows tablets. So Microsoft make the Surface, which is a very, very good device, and is light and has great battery life.
In terms of budget, I mean, obviously we can name a whole range of names and so on.
Yeah.
But I must admit, I've been very impressed with the ubiquitous Amazon Fire that seems to have been extremely effective for just kind of accessing emails and various other bits and pieces. Not less so for making notes, but what the hey.
Yeah, it's brilliant for media. So, you know, if you're only going to use it for watching streaming services and things like that, then Amazon tablets are great because they're really, really low priced. However, they've got some issues. So, for example, Google Apps don't really work with them. Amazon and Google don't really like each other very much. So you can't watch YouTube, for example. There's no YouTube app on Amazon. They've got their own store, and some of the apps are a bit more expensive. And as you say, for a productivity perspective, it's not great. So if you're going to want to take it into the classroom and attach it to a keyboard and do a bit of work, that's not really designed for that. But as a second screen device, it's brilliant.
A few years ago, people were very much excited by the fact that you can have your laptop with detachable screen and so on and so forth. Do you think that's, again, something which is going to remain popular, that you actually have your keypads that you can attach as and when you wish?
It's getting more and more popular. The strange thing that's happening with this is that they, at the start, these were quite low-cost devices, and now they've become really super expensive. So you've got the Surface Book from Microsoft, and that's kind of topping up at £2,500 or something like that, or even higher, depending on specifications. So they're getting really quite expensive. You don't have many of the lower-cost ones. What tends to happen now is just traditional laptops come in at the sort of £200-£300 range. But as I said, really, don't do it to yourself. The other option is Chromebooks. So this is a laptop, essentially, but instead of using Microsoft Windows, it's using Google's operating system, which is much lighter. So you can't do as much with it, but because it's so much lighter, you can have a lower specification device that actually works really, really well for productivity. So you can, you know, you've got your equivalent of Microsoft Office, and you can access a few apps and things like that. So if you are going to, if you really want a laptop and you want to spend less than £400, then I would recommend looking at Chromebooks.
And looking again at the range of mobile phones that obviously there, I mean, looking at some of the costs of the new Samsung scenario, like, that's a little bit of a sort of high end £2,000 to £3,000 sort of package from that perspective. Would you say actually, if you're going to go down that route, well, actually, again, the one thing I've always been irritated by with respect to the mobile phone is actually you want a larger screen size to actually see what you're actually operating on in many ways.
You are. I mean, the Samsung, actually, the Note is a very interesting device, and actually some the Samsung Galaxy phones the last few years, they've created this thing called DeX. And what DeX is it allows you to connect it to, with the Note 9, it's a little dongle, essentially, that lets you output to a TV or a monitor. And then you can attach a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse, and you can actually use it as a computer. So if you do have £1,000 to spend to buy outright on something like the Note 9, then you could potentially have in your dorm room just a monitor and plug that in there, and then you can use all the Android apps and use it as your laptop, essentially as your computer in your room.
More and more courses are actually looking for online facility for ease of access and so on and so forth. Do you feel as though we're heading very much to a day of having avatars from both student perspectives and indeed from tutoring perspectives?
I think we're a little bit away from it, but I do see it happening. We're seeing virtual reality and augmented reality really, really going forward. So virtual reality, you know, you put a headset on, you're isolated, but you're seeing. So you could essentially be sitting in a classroom with a headset on, but actually just being in the comfort of your own home. And augmented reality is kind of where you've got things appearing for you in the real world. So Pokemon Go is a really good example of that as well. So we're seeing more and more of these tools being used in schools. Both Apple and Microsoft now have kind of pushed towards schools getting the tablets for these kind of uses. Eventually, I think that might very well be the case. You know, online courses and being in classrooms without actually physically being there, I think is going to happen.
And yet somehow there's something strangely wonderful about connecting with you across the airways via a studio system, from a studio in Lincoln to a studio in London. I feel it gives a whole personality to the whole system. We've both taken the Turing test, and I think we've both passed. What's the best place to go to find out further information about some of the things we've literally just touched the surface of, no pun intended, today, Evan?
If you come to trustreviews.com, we have created some great content there about what you should look for when buying a laptop for school or university.
Evan, as ever, it's been a delight. You know, there's two final questions, but we'll ask you them in any case. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
It's been fantastic, Alex.
In which case, can we connect with you again in the near future and keep us appraised of all manner of things as far as technology is concerned?
Of course you can.
You gotta show me all the things you wanna happen to you. We've gotta take
certainly making use of technology. Bonnie Tyler, Faster Than the Speed of Light. It's 27 minutes nearly past 9 a.m. here on Lincoln Siren Radio. Coming up in a few seconds, we'll be speaking to the former director of Play England, Kath Prisk, and Gillian Binks from Microsoft, talking about the importance of creativity as opposed to curricular activities and how extracurricular activities can be beneficial for all, but especially children.
I surprise you.
Yes. That you, who have written so much of better worlds, should think it a dream when you find one? Or is it that you fail to recognize one of your own dreams when you see it? And this is our school. This is where we start to prepare our young for the future.
Small at all, and just the way a tiny branch is like a tree to a twig. To someone else, you are.
Partially wrong. To someone else you are strong.
soundtrack to the remake in the 1970s of a classic 1940s movie, Lost Horizon, all about Shangri-La, education, so on. Some interesting points there. We will be speaking, hopefully in a few moments, to our fine folk from Microsoft and indeed the outdoor play expert and former director at Play England, Kath Prisk. But to keep the educational theme going on GCSE Results Day...
Well, now, there you are, here I am, and where are we?
Ah, success. You think that was funny, folks?
You ain't heard nothing yet.
Now, what are you learning?
French.
French. Well, that lets me out. I know nothing about French. A teacher should only teach what he knows, and all I know is show business. I don't think they'd approve. You know, when I was a kid, the thing that got me was that every teacher I ever had only asked me questions and expected answers. You too? Well, I'll tell you what I think. Any dummy can know the answers. It's the smart ones who know the questions.
Question me and answer bright and clear. I will answer with a question clear and bright. Even though your answer may be wrong, my question will be right. Question me and answer. Answer with a question. The year that Babe Ruth hit his 60th home run.
Wellington at Waterloo.
Who became the hero at the Battle of Bull Run? Learning can be lots of fun. Question me and answer bright and clear. I will answer with a question clear and bright. Even though your answer may be wrong, my question will be right. Question me and answer. Answer with a question.
Midnight Ride of Paul Revere.
What's the way that Yankee Doodle really went to town?
Cleaning up the atmosphere.
What's the reason London Bridge is always falling down?
You can learn things from a clown.
Question me and answer bright and clear.
I will answer with even though your answer may be wrong, my question will be right. Question me an answer. Answer with a question.
On the good ship Lollipop,
how did Christopher Columbus sail upon the sea?
Underneath the circus top,
where did Cleopatra get to be born, Antony?
Question me and answer if you please.
I will answer with a question if I can. Let me show you just how I became an educated man. Question me and answer. If you wanna know, if you wanna hear, if you wanna see, question me, an answer.
Excellent. Okay, now hopefully, fingers crossed, we will be able to go live now to the aforementioned fabulous dynamic duo to talk about this education aspect, etc. First of all, education and outdoor play expert and former director at Play England, that would be Kath Prisk. Kath, are you indeed there? Hello, Kat. Obviously, Kat. And indeed, we should also be speaking to Gillian Binks from Microsoft, but also she's not actually there as well. We can hardly hear them. And then, just when you're actually dealing with aspects relating to technology, who knows what could be happening. We'll just try one more time. Have we actually got Kath Prisk and Gillian from Microsoft in the studio? No, they're obviously in a completely different world from that point of view. So never mind, life continues. We'll probably look to do some sort of patchwork package from that point of view. Up next, hesitating to actually say what's coming up next from this particular perspective, we've got interior designer Mel Massey with something we were talking about with Ian Lennox a few moments ago, which was where do we actually sort of position our technology in terms of rooms, in terms of houses and various other bits and pieces? And is the television still very much at the centre of our living rooms?
Secrets can't
And some upcoming news as far as Siren Radio is concerned at 10 o'clock this evening, today, actually 10 a.m. this morning. Let's get the day sorted out. We will be hopefully having the return of Yusuf. Yusuf on Thursday should be back. This evening at 7 o'clock, we will be having another Sound in Nick's Vision. And as promised, that whole notion of design and interior design, etc., should be with us in a matter of moments from now. But frankly, you get to a stage where you think, what's going on here? And of course, the irony being, of course, it's all about the technology. Still, so it goes.
International system
of typographic picture
education. International system
of typographic picture
education.
And as we continue to head through the 21st century, allowing for the fact that the living room or lounge and so on has always taken centre stage in the home, with a space for dining, entertaining and family bonding, we've had lots of changes and evolution in terms of the shape of that right the way through from the last century when television emerged in the latter years to become centre stage. It seems now that TV is still at the top of our priorities, even though an astounding 67% of people still use a stand for their television set, according to research commissioned by Samsung. Now, to talk about this and the appropriate way of sorting out the ergonomics and design and the evolution of the living room, who better than interior designer and stylist and indeed former lead designer for DIY SOS, it's the awesome Mel Massey. How are you, Mel?
Morning. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Now, this whole system about living room space, design inspiration and so on, would you say that the days of actually having a TV on a stand, they really should be consigned to the days where effectively, you know, you had a giant radio set in one side of the room?
Yes, I think that we just we've moved on. Space is at a premium. We do not need these clunky TV stands in our lounges and in our living rooms anymore. We need to put them on the wall, because it's just so much space saving.
And is it all about the space these days? I mean, have we actually gone from the days of where we look back at Victorian houses and Edwardian houses and indeed the last, and I have to say I'm probably still guilty of this, where there's so much clutter around, that actually we actually wanted to have nice, fine lines, sharp lines, almost kind of Scandinavian lines in many ways?
I think we've moved on a little bit from that, to be honest. The very fine lines to a bit more of an eclectic mix. But I think that if people haven't moved house for a really long time, then we just accumulate objects, don't you? We all know, we're all guilty of that. And I think having a big sort out is critical every so often.
So why is it that this television set that people say it's the end of television, it's not going to happen, people aren't watching, everybody's watching their smartphones, their devices and so on, it's not there. Why is the television still perceived as being such an absolutely essential part of the great British living room?
I think there is space for, for bonding, family bonding over a film on a Sunday night. I think there are, they can be a bit of a status symbol for some people. How big's your TV? It's now, rather than your car. I think we've moved on from that. I think that, this Samsung research that we've just recently done, 44% of people think of the TV as the focal point of their life. We want to be connected 24/7.
Well, presumably combining with an earlier piece we actually did, if you actually had a TV set in your car, then you covered both of those sort of sets from that
point
of view.
Not a good idea.
No, exactly. Are there going to be slightly different trends emerging? Or, again, in terms of size, it's interesting that we tend to watch movies either on teeny tiny portable devices or massive mega screen TV sets. I was talking to one of our correspondents earlier today, a 72-inch television set takes pride of place in his house and so on.
Wow, that is a big black box when it's not on, when it's not turned on. I think people a lot of people are put off by the TV. We've all got them in our lounges, but from an interior designer's perspective, it's a massive black box on the wall that dominates a room, and that is not aesthetically beautiful. Samsung have got this new cool telly called the QLED, which has an ambient mode, which basically blends into the background, so it has a really thin thin frame around it. And blends into whatever, so it is not having this domineering black box on the wall, which, from my perspective, is absolutely lovely. Also, no wires. The wires are such a nightmare. So it's just an almost invisible wire, and especially on the wall. We've got wall space. We just don't have much floor space anymore. It feels like it's at a premium. Everybody.
So the notion of camouflaging and actually having TV blending into the background, having pastoral scenes, is that something which is going to be emerging as a sort of standard line that you almost don't notice it on the wall until you actually press the D button to that sort of connects it to yourself and the world?
Yes, absolutely. We used to have big chunky black frames, didn't we? And now they're thin. They look like a picture frame.
Cabinet
and they're
boxes.
Amazing. So you can there's that mode. There's an ambient mode. There's also the frame which you can put art. So it's a real expression of yourself.
You can have
art on the wall in your TV screen, which is there until you're ready to watch.
This is radical thinking, Mel. This is one of the reasons why you are the top interior designer. Now, you're far too young to remember the days where we actually had that television cabinet and box from that perspective. But what tips and advice would you actually give to people who would be looking for a little bit more space, etc.? Would it be a case of, for goodness sakes, go now, put the old television stand to one side and actually make sure it's wall-mounted?
Put it on the wall. You can hide the wires. The wall, because our wall space is not so utilised, like you can put pictures and things like that on it, but also make it into a display. So if you, put pictures around it, put objects on the wall to make it into a, kind of an eclectic mix, so it's not just about your TV.
And in terms of designers, clearly we're talking about the Samsung research here. They're designed televisions to complement rather than dominate the living room.
Yeah.
Is that something which we'll see? Yeah, actually, that's going to be the pattern as we head into the 2020s and beyond.
Yes, I really think so. I think that gone are the days, of this black box on the wall. Which, I think the TV will still be a focal point for a lot of people, the TV. And, if you look at historically, for the last 60, 70 years, the TV has become more and more dominating.
You see, Mel, I like to look back at the days of the Ovaltinis gathered all around the radio set and actually listening to the radio programming. That's a different line. I mean, that's
I don't remember that.
No, you know, no,
watching telly on a Sunday night with my boys, that's what I like to do. Well, that's our absolute tradition. To watch a film together.
In which case, that's fairly critical from that point of view. So where can people actually go to if they want to find out further information about some of the things we've been speaking about today?
So if they go to samsung.com/UK, there's all the details are there, with some lots of good tips as well.
Mel, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link yourself. Has it been okay for you?
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much. You've been lovely.
Splendid. Well, we look forward to hopefully featuring you again in the not-too-distant future. Mel
Love
Massey,
that.
Interior designer extraordinaire, I think, is the key thing. Extraordinaire. Many thanks indeed, and keep watching the TV sets. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.